Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today, WBGO's Dave Popkin recaps the 49th Saratoga Jazz Festival.
To be able to experience this firsthand and to be on a bill with the same name as Bill Frisell, Terry Lynn Carrington, Patti LaBelle, it's amazing that through this music I have the opportunity to aspire to create on a level similar to all my heroes that I love so much.
I'll chat with acclaimed drummer Joe Farnsworth about his upcoming concert as part of the William Patterson University's Summer Jazz Room Series.
Every time I play, I'll be carrying the message that Harold Mayburn always told me, keep stepping and swing hard.
And WBGO's John Kalish reports on some advances in Bluetooth technology.
These little speakers are ideal for listening to audiobooks, podcasts, and of course, your favorite radio news magazine.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. This year's Saratoga Jazz Festival was an artistic success, with 22 bands performing on two stages over 2 days at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. WBGO's Dave Popkin was on the scene.
The 49th annual festival featured a wide variety of acts, from jazz and blues to soul and funk. Youth was served at this year's event, with stars like Lakeisha Benjamin, Kingfish Ingram, and Alexa Tarantino giving stirring performances. WBGO's Leslie Harrison made the trip with many BGO members, and we were treated to special moments like Cecile McLaurin-Salvant dedicating a song to her hero, Diane Reeves, who was in the front row, before performing herself the next day. Another name familiar to jazz fans was guitar legend Bill Frisell, who played a timely tribute.
Well, I always think about Sonny Rollins, you know, but that was I'm an old cowhand, which he's been on my mind. He's always on my mind. He's such an inspiration. And yeah, we played this Delphonics song, La La Means I Love You, and then a couple of my own tunes in there. And never quite know what we're going to do. I made a set list and then we immediately veered off from that.
One of the rising stars of jazz is singer Tyreek McDowell, who was honored to be in good company.
It's amazing to be platformed amongst all this greatness that I'm surrounded by. I just got the chance to see Chris Potter. I'm from Orlando, Florida, and there's not much jazz going on, and a lot of folks, y'all don't like to tour in Florida. What's up with that? But but to be able to experience this firsthand and to be on a bill with the same name as Bill Frisell, Terry Lynn Carrington, Patti LaBelle, to name a few, you know, it's amazing that that through this music I have the opportunity to share a stage or, you know, aspire to be at the same level. Or, you know, it's not a competition, but to aspire to create on a level similar to all my heroes that I love so much. It means so much. And to show new music, because I just recorded a new album. It's been produced by Theo Croker. It's also on the Artwork label. And I just dropped a single entitled Wild as the Wind. We previewed that here today. So it's amazing that I have a platform to show that music as well and see its reception to human beings. It's great.
Love me, say you do. Let me fly away with you. For my love is like the wind.
The Skidmore Jazz Faculty All-Stars played a terrific set on Sunday, led by bassist Todd Kuhlman. Much of their performance honored John Coltrane's centennial, so saxophonist Jimmy Green was featured prominently.
John Coltrane's someone we all study, and especially playing the instrument I do, it's pretty much mandatory that you spend a good chunk of your development studying John Coltrane, his music, his playing, and what he means to our music. You know, his legacy looms so large, And even at my stage right now, where I do a lot of composing and arranging and things like that and playing original music, you always come back to John Coltrane because he left us such a great legacy and so inspirational. Just to hear his sound, I've often told people when I'm, you know, when my wife and I are out at dinner or walking around somewhere and there's John Coltrane playing on the sound system, it's one of those sounds that for me personally, I'm sure for many people, it takes my attention. I can't not listen to John Coltrane. Like when I hear that sound, it just kind of, it just has such a presence, it pierces right through me. So that's the kind of thing that always brings us back to Train.
A blues singer and guitarist from Georgia, Eddie Ninevolt, stole the show on Sunday afternoon on the Discovery Stage with an electrifying set.
Where does the time go when no one's around you? Don't it feel like space and time are all but one? All but one. Like a dog on the post, you just chill all night. Everything you wonder is what's wrong with me.
With Eddie Ninevolt here on WBGO at Saratoga. Phenomenal set. It took you about 2 seconds to win over these jazzers. Congratulations. This was a great crowd.
Thank you, brother. It was awesome, man. We really appreciate you guys and one of the best festivals there is out in the world. And just happy and honored to be here, man.
Seems like you guys are really on a roll, long tour right now and a new record, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we got a new record coming out with the Easy Eye Records with Dan Arbach in November. Check it out, man.
What is your goal in a festival like this when you see a big crowd?
Oh, just make sure that everyone has a good time, better time than they came in, and give them a better attitude on life, you know?
Event producer Danny Melnick mentioned to the crowds and to our Doug Doyle that he's already hard at work on next year's Saratoga Jazz Festival, which will be the 50th.
So I've made a bunch of offers to artists already for next year. It's crazy that we're like doing this one now and already planning the 50th next year. It's really one of the nicest amphitheater, you know, venues in America, along with Wolf Trap in Virginia and Ravinia in Chicago. It's just a beautiful place to be. And when the weather's nice up there, it's just a spectacular 2 days.
In Saratoga Springs for the WBGO Journal, I'm Dave Popkin.
As part of the Summer Jazz Room series at William Patterson University, the Joe Farnsworth Big Room Quartet featuring pianist Emmett Cohen will perform on Wednesday, July 22nd at 7:30 in the evening. Acclaimed drummer, bandleader, and composer Joe Farnsworth is our guest today. Joe, great to see you.
How you doing, sir? And how you doing, all you jazz lovers out there around the world?
I know it's a hot one today in South Hadley, Massachusetts.
Well, it's always hot in South Hadley, Massachusetts. There's always something cooking up here. So it's great to be back where I was born and raised.
This is a homecoming for you at William Patterson University. You attended William Patterson College at the time and studied under Harold Mayburn. What do you remember most about your days at WP?
Well, I remember in this very house, I was reading Downbeat magazine. And this is when Bill Evans, the saxophone player, got the job with Miles Davis. And this must have been 85, 84. And I saw he mentioned that he was going to this small school in New Jersey called William Patterson College. And that intrigued me. So I auditioned at Rutgers, where my brother John went, and I wanted to study with Michael Carvin. And then I auditioned for William Patterson under Rufus Reed was there, and Dr. Criven was there. And I knew right away that's the place I wanted to be. Especially, I was already a big Lee Morgan fan and George Coleman fan, so I knew a lot about Harold Mayburn. And so I wanted to be around Harold Mayburn. And the first thing I can remember, is my practice room was right next to Bill Stewart's, and he was practice shaming me all the way back then because I'd go out and play basketball. And he was back in the practice room practicing. Then I'd go out and get pizza, and he was back in the practice room practicing. So I knew I had to change my life a little bit then. But my first performance was a dialogue day where you play for the teachers. And Tony Williams was from Boston and studied with Alan Dawson and played Seven Steps to Heaven. And my group, he was about 18 then. I was about 18 myself. studying with Alan Dawson, coming from Massachusetts, and I thought I was going to burn the place down. I thought William Pastor was never going to hear anything like this in their life. And I played, and Harold Maver spoke up and said, young man, you need to learn how to walk before you run. And that's the first thing I remember Harold Maver ever saying to me.
and great advice, too, from
yeah,
him.
Sure is.
You're on quite a roll because this latest release that you have is just doing so well. Right. And one of the players on that is someone who's going to join you. The album, by the way, The Big Room, not only was number one on the jazz charts for a while, but features Jeremy Pelt, Sarah Hanahan, Joe Ross, Yoshiti Nakamura, and, of course, Emmett Cohen. You and Emmett Cohen really have connected, haven't you?
We sure have. About 10 years ago when he moved to New York, him and Tavon Pendicott and Benny Benack, Joe Saylor were playing after us. And I'd never seen them before. And they're a bunch of youngsters. And we were playing, you know, at that time, it's funny thinking back. You know, my generation, we had to be all serious. You had to, you had to do this. You had to act a certain way on the stage. And you had to, like, if you're going to play a tune off the record, it had to sound just like the record, you know. And you had to conform to certain rules. And a lot of it was great. But some of the fun part was absent. But I didn't realize that. And these guys up there were having fun. And people in my generation were kind of like, hey, why are they having so much fun? And they haven't had enough experience to have fun like that. After a couple of years of seeing them, I'm like, hey, I like to have fun myself. Maybe I should join them, man. And that's what I did. All players, man, no matter what age it is, you got to change and you got to build a bridge to the youngsters because you can learn a lot from them, for sure. Inspiration. Emmett Cohen, the last couple of years we've been playing a lot together, the guy is 24/7, putting out positive vibes. You know, he's talking about Willie the Lion Smith, he's talking about Bud Powell, and it's going around to every corner of the world. And all these youngsters that never heard jazz before are on YouTube or Facebook or Instagram, and they're hearing about Bud Powell, they're hearing about Barry Harris, they're hearing about Tommy Flanagan and Cedar Walton, which they'd never have heard before. So he's been it's not a put on, it's not sort of acting. He truly lives it 24/7, and I really admire it. And every time he plays, he wants it to be the best concert someone's ever heard. And at first I thought, well, that's a little bit, I never heard something said like that before, but now I believe in it. Like, every time he plays, he wants it to be the best possible concert that these people have seen before. And I'm a massive fan.
Dr. Tim Newman had talked about how great it is to, to work with you, to bring you into the Summer Jazz Room series at William Patterson University. And what can we expect from the band during this concert that not only will fans of Joe Farnsworth and Emmett Cohen show up, but a lot of students come back to the university too to check out what's the scene like?
Yeah. Well, we definitely show what the scene's like, and I will definitely, every time I play, I'll be carrying the message that Harold Maburn always told me, keep stepping and swing hard. He was always talking about, you can't swing hard enough, and he was always talking about, you can't let anybody outpower you. You know, like, you gotta maintain a power that never, it never goes away. And so that's, I think about that all the time I play. So I'm going to bring that there, and I'm going to bring all that power Bill Stewart gave me. And lots of guys, Norman Simmons used to be there, Rufus Reed used to be there, and a lot of great players. And of course, the kids are going to see that you can have fun when you play, and and swinging is still is in vogue to me, man. It never goes out of style. And it's gotten to the point where, like in the late 60s there, like Ornette Coleman, those guys are avant-garde and kind of out. Well, I think playing straight ahead is kind of avant-garde these days, man. So it's a joy to be able to play and present the giants of the past like Cedar Walton, Art Taylor, Jimmy Cobb, Elvin Jones, Max Roach, Buddy Rich, and on and on and on, these people that I grew up with, and they're ever present every time I play.
You played with so many greats. I'm always curious, as a band leader, when you're a drummer, what kind of different responsibilities are there for a drummer when you're leading the band?
Well, the only way I could describe it is that right before COVID, three of my greatest mentors, McCoy Tyner, Pharoah Sanders, and Harold Mabern passed away. These were three people that I've been taking for years and years and years, and on the bandstand, feeding off their energy, feeding off their consistency, feeding off their greatness, and feeding off their just the way they walked on this planet. I would watch them and feed off them and channel them in my playing. And with them gone and me having to step up, or as I said, I had to grow up during COVID. I was 53 years old. I just couldn't be that guy that was following people around anymore. I had to grow up. So my responsibility to me is what they set the tone for, that energy, that high standard, and that just the pure of heart they had to play this music, to be a part of this fellowship. I take that very seriously. I don't think I can pass it on like they pass it on, but I got to keep trying. You know, I got to give back, you know, because I took for a long time, Doug, and I want to give back now, but I got to learn how to give back at the quality they gave back, which is the highest quality for sure.
Speaking of giving back,
yeah,
aspiring jazz drummers of today, yeah, if you could say, well, you can't make this event, but you want to give them some advice, what would it be?
Oh, definitely what I learned from the great Alan Dawson is to pick up your drumsticks and pad every day and focus in on two rudiments every 2 weeks, slow, full strokes to fast to slow. And you concentrate on those two rudiments for 2 weeks. That's the way Alan Dawson taught. That's one thing, one of the great things I learned from him. And that's how you develop a sound, and you got your strength in your hands. And then my other great teacher, the great Arthur Taylor, he was listen to learn, learn to listen. And our first three lessons, all we did was listen to Sarah Vaughan and lyrics. He told me one time he was playing, and Papa Joe Jones hit him upside the head with a rolled up New York Times paper. And he's like, hey, Papa Joe, why are you doing that? He says, you goober-headed little rascal, you don't know the tune, man. You're embarrassing me. And AT's like, how you know I don't know the tune? It's just a ballad. And he says, because you sound terrible. And AT's like, he's right. And so what AT was talking about was learning one tune a month, lyrics. Sarah Vaughan, Don't Blame Me. Listen to how Frank Sinatra sang it. Listen to how Charlie Parker played it. And then the other thing would be once a week, learn one bird tune and one Bud Powell tune, because those were the two architects of rhythm and phrasing and how to play this music and how to swing. And so you learn the melody exactly like Bud Powell plays. Let's say the first week is Jonas Abbey, and then for bird you can learn Confirmation. You learn the melody over and over and over. You know, repetition is huge. Get it so it's in your bones. So you're not playing at the music, you're playing in the music. And then learn how to, once you got the melody down, learn how to disperse it between the snare drum and bass drum while you're riding on the ride cymbal. Those are my big lessons. Max Roach told me his first lesson with Lester Young was just to sit down and listen. And that's what Max told me. So the main thing is to listen and listen. Learn tunes, learn records, learn where Art Taylor's from. Learn where Alan Dawson's from. Learn where Jimmy Cobb's from. Learn where they're from. Learn what records they're on. Learn the history of all these players. That's why there's never a dull moment in jazz, because there's always something to listen to.
Mm. And just two more questions for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Growing up in a musical family right there, where
yes,
you're at right now,
right,
we've heard so much about, is it important that you get your kids involved in music? Well, William Patterson University has been synonymous with a great jazz program for years. Obviously, you believe that music leads to a better education for young kids all the way through.
Oh, for sure. I think it's one of the biggest misnomers that education and college and universities have kind of ruined jazz somehow by making it academic. That's never been the case from my experience, and especially William Patterson. They first of all, their faculty is great, and the students there are great. And the main thing out of any musician is to be part of this fellowship and be around good people. And so at William Patterson and these colleges, you know, you're playing with people every day. You're learning from people every day. You got professors that inspire you every day. I walked every time Harold Mayburn was in the classroom. I said, "Hey, Mr. Mayburn, what's the word of the day?" And he'd say something, and we'd go listen to it. Every week he posted the weekly the Jackie Gleason show. The Jackie Gleason had a big band, and this is the tunes that they played on the show, and there'd be about 15 tunes. And then he would ask questions. Do you know these tunes? And of course, hardly any of us knew them, but we'd have to learn them. And so it's a great place to sit and be a part of the fellowship, listen, learn to listen, and just play, you know? And then you go into New York and see Louis Hayes, or you go and see Jeff Watts or Bill Stewart, and then you come back home. And what you saw, you practice. It's very simple, man. It's beautiful. One of the great gifts about music is being a part of a fellowship. You're never alone, man. There's always someone that you can play with. There's always someone you can talk to. There's always someone you can listen to records with. There's always someone you can call to go out and hear music, or just call and talk about Miles Davis, four and more, or you listen to Charlie Parker live at the Storyville, and you know, and you have listening parties. Those listening parties were the favorite moments of my life.
It's great to see in a t-shirt because we always see you as one of the classiest dressers on the stage. Who taught you to look good, to play good?
Oh, well, you know, Art Blakey says they see you before they hear you. And so that stuck with me. Well, my first... You know, of course, the records, you know, the thing about the records is the liner notes and the pictures. And Miles Davis was always wearing a suit, and Art Blakey was wearing a suit, and Frank Sinatra was wearing a suit, Charlie Parker was wearing a suit, and these are on the record dates, you know. And my first real big gig was with Benny Golson, was always a suit. And one of my first big tours was 60 years of Benny Golson, and it was with Benny, Curtis Fuller, and Art Farmer. And Curtis Fuller and Art Farmer, they were all wearing suits. Curtis Fuller and Art Farmer would go, they'd check in the hotel, then go to the bar and get a champagne. And Art Farmer says, "Yeah, man, you'd like to get a champagne?" I'm like, "Yeah." And then he took out his pocket square and put it into my jacket and says, "Don't embarrass me." And so he's like not having a pocket square. So I wear that pocket square in honor of Art Farmer.
And
Benny Golson, man, those guys were high class. They were the kings, man. They were the three kings.
You know, and now you're sharing this knowledge with, you know, with the younger players like Emmett, who, you know, you've bonded with in this latest album that you have. The Summer Jazz Room Series at William Patterson University, Joe Farnsworth Big Room Quartet featuring pianist Emmett Cohen. That'll be on Wednesday, July 22nd at 7:30. Thanks for putting up with the heat, Joe, and thanks for joining us here on WBGO.
Well, Doug, thanks for having me on here, man. It's always great to talk to a jazz lover like yourself.
You can also see my interview with Joe Farnsworth on the WBGO YouTube channel. Many of you may be listening to the WBGO Journal over a Bluetooth speaker. WBGO's John Kalish has a report now on some advances in Bluetooth technology that will appeal to everyone, including listeners with hearing loss.
The Swedish furniture chain IKEA is now selling a $10 Bluetooth speaker. Callsup is a 3-inch plastic cube that comes in pink, white, and neon green. These little speakers are ideal for listening to audiobooks, podcasts, and of course, your favorite radio news magazine.
Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today, the pro.
It doesn't vibrate and dance across my desk when it's loud like other cheap Bluetooth speakers tend to do.
There are a slew of reviews of the Callsup speaker on YouTube.
And at reasonable volumes, sounds far better than a $10 speaker has any right to.
The unique thing about the CallSup is that you can pair up to 100 of these small speakers to one device. So if two people in the same house want to listen to WBGO.org, but one is in the kitchen and the other is in the living room, the CallSup has you covered. But if you're an audiophile, you probably don't want to use these to listen to opera. In April, I went to Lincoln Center for a demonstration of a new Bluetooth technology called AuraCast. In David Geffen Hall, the South African soprano Golda Schultz sang works by Barber and Stravinsky. The performance was broadcast over an AuraCast system. AuraCast can be heard by an unlimited number of devices. I listened on a pair of earbuds provided by the company doing the demo. I have excellent hearing, and the sound through the earbuds reminded me of listening to music through headphones instead of speakers. At a reception after the opera performance, I met Richard Einhorn, who suffered sudden and severe hearing loss in 2010. Einhorn closely follows advances in what is known as assistive listening technology. When AuraCast first came onto his radar, he got very excited.
From the moment I heard about it, I realized how important it was to this community, to my community.
Einhorn's community is growing. It's estimated that more than 40 million Americans have some degree of hearing loss. Einhorn is a composer and record producer. In 2024, his score for the silent film The Passion of Joan of Arc was performed at Alice Tully Hall. He was extremely impressed with the quality of the sound in the AuraCast feed.
The thing about AuraCast is that it's got incredibly high fidelity. It's in stereo. Some systems are not. It's got a very wide dynamic range, loud to soft. And it's got very, very flat frequency response because it's digital. You hear a lot of lows, you hear a lot of highs, and it all goes into your hearing aids, which then processes it for your hearing loss.
Also at the reception was Andrew Belovia, who wears hearing aids.
My hearing loss is purely noise-induced. Too much live rock music, listening with loud headphones, loud stereo system in the car. So I've been wearing hearing aids for 8 years now.
Belovia's company installed the AuraCast equipment for the opera performance. It turns out that he had heard AuraCast at Lincoln Center in 2024 during the performance of Richard Einhorn's silent film score.
As a person who appreciates music, it just knocked me over. The clarity of the music was so much better, and I fell in love with it personally at that moment. And I've been evangelizing for it ever since.
Up until now, the assistive listening technology in public venues has either been infrared or FM. Richard Einhorn says that AuraCast is an affordable alternative for public venues.
It's only a few thousand dollars to get a working AuraCast public assistive listening system. And that means that a lot more venues can afford very high quality public assistive listening. And right now it's a serious problem. Those of us with hearing loss have a lot of trouble at plays, at concerts, at public meetings. It's really difficult. And this has the potential to change that.
And Einhorn says that even people who don't have hearing loss will benefit from AuraCast.
You'll be able to go to a concert, and even if you have normal hearing, you could go to the concert and say, oh, cool, I really want to hear it over my earbuds, and you'd just be able to hear it. As a consumer technology, it lets you share your music. Your phone can now connect to two earbuds or two hearing aids or 5 or 10 or 20. It's been impossible until AuraCast, but now it's possible.
That means the days of seeing a couple on the subway sharing wired earbuds to listen to some tunes are numbered. AuraCast is coming to smartphones, TVs, and all manner of computers in the coming months and years. For the WBGO Journal, I'm John Kalish.
Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO at WBGO.org.